Get started. Thanks for coming this morning. My name is Yoni Kirsch. I'm the chief pilot and all-round propeller head at Fast Track Technology. And I'm joined by
Arun. I'm Arun Ramprasad. I work on the network architecture side of things in Fast Track Technologies.
And we've got something a little bit different for everyone today. I hope that we can live up to the description that we put in the schedule. Today we thought we'd do something a bit different and discuss connectivity insofar as it relates to Office 365. Now, I recognise about half the people in the room, so I think a lot of you have come to sessions in the past, and often the team from Fast Track are presenting at events like this on topics around some other elements of Office 365 deployment, specifically Pro Plus we do a lot of work around. But Fast Track are involved in quite a lot of large enterprise-level deployments of Office 365. And a recurring theme that I at least have noticed when talking to customers over the last few years is that connectivity is something that either A, gets overlooked altogether in planning of Office 365 deployments, or B, doesn't get overlooked, as is the case for everyone in this room, obviously, simply by virtue of the fact that you're here, doesn't get overlooked, but is often underestimated or something that causes challenges for organisations during those deployments, at any rate. And so I kind of thought that this year it would be important for us to delve a bit deeper into the connectivity story for Office 365 and share some of the insights that we've gathered along the journey that we've been on for the last few years. So in terms of, just to set the groundwork for this session, going to try and keep it really casual. Personally, I've found that works for my style. So if there's questions, interruptions, comments, feedback, booing, hissing, whatever, then I'd invite you to speak up at any time during the session. If either of us haven't landed a point in a satisfactory fashion, then please ask us to clarify. It's the best gauge that we're going to get as to how we're doing and whether you're getting value out of the session. So I'm really, really keen to make this as interactive as possible. I'm going to save lots of time for questions at the end because I just have a funny feeling that there are going to be some. And not too heavy on the slides. We've got some if we need them to draw scribble pictures on and whatnot. But we'd really like to, like I said, make this an interactive conversation that everyone can take some value away from. So in terms of what that value should look like, if I do my job right, if, Arun helps me out, if I don't, there are essentially three key messages that we're looking for you to take away from the session today. The first, we'd really like for everyone to have a good or at least a better understanding of how the Microsoft Global Network hangs together. It's quite a big network, as you'll see, and I think certainly for those of us involved in Office 365 projects, there's perhaps not as much information out there publicly as might be helpful on how the Microsoft network is architected. So, certainly the conversations that we've had and that I've had, customers often don't have the background information that they need to make good architectural decisions about their own networks insofar as how they connect to Microsoft. So, number one, if you can have a better understanding of how the Microsoft network hangs together, my hope is that you can make better decisions on your own architectural choices or the information that you provide back to your network team if you're indeed not the network team. So that's number one. The second thing that I'd like for you to take away today is some more details around each of the kind of key Office 365 workloads, and we will bundle a few of them together where they behave in a similar fashion. But we want to speak through in a little bit of detail the key workloads and what types of traffic they generate and where that traffic is going from and to, because that's often also something that comes up in the workshops that we run is understand, is Microsoft initiating that connection or is the client initiating that connection and how is that connection traveling? And, again, these are things that need to be well understood in order to design a network architecture that's suitable for the new world, for the cloud environment. And lastly is we're going to discuss some internal, I suppose, considerations around network design. So we'll talk a little bit about DNS. We'll talk a little bit about proxy servers and how they can impact connectivity and performance in Office 365. And we've got a few other diagnostic and troubleshooting tips that we would like to share with you. Arun's going to do some demos and step you through some network traces and whatnot to show you what's going on behind the scenes and hopefully give you some thoughts about where you can go to you know, get some more information if you do find yourself troubleshooting either performance or connectivity problems in Office 365. I'm just trying to look around the room. We actually just stepped off a call with a long-standing customer who had some Office 365 connectivity issues not half an hour ago before we walked into the session. So we're obviously kind of thinking, hey, we must be on the right track here if this is the calls that we're getting as we walked into the room. Anyway, everyone happy with that? It's your last chance to change the agenda. I'm open to suggestions. No? Okay. We'll keep moving. So, here's a nice yellow screen. I hate slides. You'll have to excuse me. I'm only going to use a couple of them. So to start off with, I think I'll just speak very quickly about the Microsoft Network. There's probably not a huge amount of detail that needs to go into it, but just to set the scene a little bit, the Microsoft Global Network is the network that runs all of Microsoft's public-facing and enterprise-facing services. It is, in fact, the third largest network, computer network in the world. I'll leave you to look up what the other two largest networks in the world are. I'll give you a hint. If I tell you what one of them is, then I'd have to kill you. So Microsoft is the third largest network in the world. You can see behind us here that there's connectivity to all of the Microsoft regions that the online services are run out of. So that's all the public services along with Office 365 and Azure. Worth noting as well that we will kind of overlap with some Azure topics here as well. And if you have questions that overflow between the two, I'm happy to digress a little bit to talk. But obviously, we want to try and keep the conversation focused around the Office 365 side of things as much as we can. So give me the next one. There you go. So a bit more context here. It's the third largest network in the world. The thing that makes it quite unique in my book is that the Microsoft Network doesn't utilize any to any large extent any resold Layer 2 or relit network services. So the entire network is based on dark fiber assets that Microsoft's acquired that connect all of these data centers together. And if you have a look here, it actually shows you a good idea of the scale of what that fiber network looks like, that you essentially have dark fiber assets throwing light across every major ocean and every continent in the world. So to me, that's pretty impressive. And it speaks to Microsoft's commitment to user experience. And the reason that it speaks to that is that Microsoft have a policy in terms of how they design and how they operate their network, in that their goal is to bring your traffic onto the Microsoft network as quickly as possible and as close to its origin as possible, and then to keep it on the network for as long as possible. So it'll obviously head to some data center somewhere that Microsoft is hosting something out of. And then the traffic is going to head back to you. It's going to stay on the Microsoft network as long as it humanly, as long as it can. And the way that differs from some other major cloud providers is that they will take a lower cost option and get the traffic back out onto the public internet as soon as possible so that they're not paying for this transit along the way. So this concept is called, it's commonly referred to as hot potato and cold potato routing. Has anyone heard of those terms before? Yeah, if you haven't, then you could probably figure out what I'm talking about pretty quickly. In this case, Microsoft uses what's called cold potato routing. So if you think of your network packets being potatoes, then Microsoft wants to get them as soon as possible and will hang on to them for as long as they can until, you know, pass them around to some internal resources. You can take them, you know, he's not paying attention. And then hang on to them as long as possible and only hand them back to you at the last minute. Whereas with hot potato routing, the concept is, oh, I don't want that traffic until it's as close to me as I can because I don't want to pay for the cost of... Let me just see if I can get my marker up here. Whoop. So the secrets are all out now. Oh, laser pointer will do. So say we've got some traffic that's originating here in Australia. If we, in the case of a Microsoft connection, this traffic is going to travel into Microsoft's network somewhere here in Australia, we hope, and then travel over the Microsoft network, say, to the United States or, you know, to Brazil or wherever it happens to be going, and it's going to stay on Microsoft's network as long as possible and then come back and leave Microsoft's network over here as close to the endpoint as possible. Another cloud provider, maybe another one that some people in the room might have some cloud compute resources with. If you have a look at their network design, you'll find that you might only be able to see routes to their Sydney data center from within Sydney. So even if you were in Melbourne, for example, and you wanted to connect with, you know, a hot potato-based cloud provider's network, then you would have to transit over the public internet until you got to Sydney, and you know, then you would get onto that provider's network. The packets would go into where they need to go and come back out in Sydney, and then go back over the public internet to get to where we say you were in Melbourne. So, and, you know, obviously, if you're in Brazil, then that's going to have a much bigger impact on performance because you have to come via some uncontended and non-SLA'd path over the public internet before you can actually get into that network. And we'll discuss the pros and cons of that a little bit later on. But does anyone want to hazard a guess as to why companies might take one of these routing policies or the other? Cost versus SLA, right? Or I might refine your answer. It's a good answer, but I would say cost versus user experience, right? So hot potato routing cloud provider is going to have a much cheaper cost in delivering the network because they only need to buy IP transit or internet connectivity from the local region where the data center lives, and then essentially the customer is responsible for the connectivity to get to that data center over the internet, whereas the Microsoft network comes at a much larger cost. You know, it's whole orders of magnitude larger cost because essentially Microsoft is trying to pick this traffic up as soon as they can. So, you know, for example, say, you know, you're traveling from a Brazilian company. I'm just going to use Brazil because right there, why not? You're traveling from Brazil. You're sat here on the Gold Coast and you're trying to access your Office 365 subscription. I'm just trying to remember now if South America has a Office 365 region. Do they, Murray? No, they'd go to North America, I guess. Anyway, so, you know, in this case, obviously, having to transit back over the internet, you could go any number of different paths. It's going to depend on the internet connection that the convention center here have got, who their upstream providers are, what their cost base is to move traffic into internationally, and all of those kind of considerations. So obviously a much higher cost that comes along with it, and also a much lower, but also a much better set of performance. So once your traffic's on the Microsoft network, and that's the other thing that we should clarify here, is that there is actually some virtue in having the traffic on the Microsoft network as soon as possible. And it's not just to, you know, make it so you don't have to go over the internet. There is actually benefit in there's a few seats up the front here if you want to come sit down. There's benefit in getting onto this network as soon as possible because this network is going to leave you with the fewest possible number of hops that you could to get to the network that you want. And that's going to obviously lead to better performance, lower latency. You'll find that connecting to any Office 365 service, if you compared, say, a server that was sitting in a data center somewhere in America, connected to a public internet circuit, versus the connectivity that you'd need to get to an Office 365 region in America. You find even going over the public internet, you're going to have much lower latency getting to that Office 365 service, because it's going to land itself onto the Microsoft network down in Sydney or in Melbourne, and then it's going to make its way from there inside that private fibre network. Anyone want to guess where this network came from? Or anyone know where this network came from? Think about the first Microsoft cloud services, publicly facing cloud services. Right? So this actually used to be called the MSN, funnily enough. And so it's now called the Microsoft Global Network. It used to be administered by an organization inside Microsoft called the Microsoft Global Network Services Team, or the GNS team, if you've heard them referred to that in the past. Worth noting that they've changed the name of that team. Just to confuse you, it's now called the Azure Networking Team. Yep, so if you want to connect to Bing or Xbox, then you do that over a connection that's administered by the Azure Networking Team. So, we all good on that? It took me a moment. Anyway, I don't need to insult you to the point of reading the rest of the overview points out of the slide there, but suffice to say it's a big network, and Microsoft put a huge investment into making it a really good network that is far more concerned with your users' user experience than it is with the cost to operate it, which I think is cool.
Yeah, and to resonate with that, Yoni, Microsoft Global Network, they have their presence in over 60 internet exchanges where they peer with around 2,000 plus ISPs and approved network service providers. So, and these 60 points of presence is spread across multiple regions in the world and pretty much covers the most part of the globe. And when we talk about the Microsoft Global Network, the main thing to consider is how efficiently we can make use of this network. Like Yoni said about how to get the packets as close to the data center as possible so that, you know, we could make use of the cold potato routing to reach the destination. So the first and foremost important aspect that one needs to consider is the DNS call that we make from the client computer to access an Office 365 service, right? You might wonder, I make a DNS call, the computer makes a DNS call, and it returns an IP address, and I connect to an Office 365 service. But that's not the exact... if you want an optimal performance or an efficient performance to reach the nearest data center where Microsoft has its presence in, Microsoft employs a concept called GeoDNS, where the DNS server looks into the call from which the local DNS server has made, and it looks into the region from which the request has come from, and it gives an IP address which is in the data center closest to the user. So that means, let's assume... Let's consider there is a company X, and they have their office in Australia, and they have their Office 365 tenant or subscription in the Australian region, right? And so you have the Microsoft Global Network. You have the Office 365 tenant inside the Microsoft Global Network. And the first thing that the users in the office would do is to, if they want to connect to an Office 365 endpoint or a workload, the first thing it does is do a DNS lookup. So the DNS lookup is made to a local DNS server in the office, and the local DNS server in turn makes a call to the Microsoft DNS servers. Now the Microsoft DNS server, it looks into from which a region the call has been made, and then it gives an IP address which is in the data center closest to the user. That means if the user is in Australia, he's going to receive an IP address from a data center in Sydney or in Melbourne. And that way, the data center is close to the user and is going to get on to the Microsoft network as soon as possible when compared to having to pass through internet or through some other region. Now, just assume if the user in this office in Australia moves to an office in Europe, branch office in Europe, and he has a VPN connection to his Australian office. And if he has a VPN connection to his Australian office, and when he does a DNS lookup, he's going to use the local DNS server in Australia, and Microsoft is going to give him an IP address, which is basically an IP address in a data center in Australia. That means this user is sitting in Europe, and he's got an IP address for the Office 365 workload from an Australian data center, and that data, he has to travel all the way through the VPN or his WAN infrastructure to access his Office 365 tenant. That's not going to be an optimal performance or efficient use, or is he making best use of the global network that's available throughout the world? No.
So Arun, also to add to that, you're probably touching now on the first kind of design, you know, piece of guidance that we can give here today, which speaks to this GeoDNS piece. So those users who are in another country, the other scenario here is anyone in the room who's running a global WAN environment with multiple internet egress points in different parts of the world. One thing that we often come across is that whilst you might have multiple internet egress paths in the world, DNS is often inside enterprise organizations handled through Active Directory, and Active Directory then will set its own hierarchy in terms of where those DNS requests are served from. So even though you might have a default gateway in Europe for European traffic on that part of the WAN, you might find that your DNS traffic is all going out one egress point at one place in the world, and that's something to consider to Arun's point as well.
That's right. So basically, pretty much, if the user is in Europe, he could do a DNS lookup to the local DNS server in Europe, so that basically the DNS server should be in the same region as where the user is currently present. So if he's in Europe, he has to do a lookup to his local DNS server in Europe, and that in turn does a lookup to the Microsoft DNS server, which returns an IP address to the data center, which is in close proximity to the user in Europe. That means he gets to the Microsoft global network as soon as he can, and he leaves the rest of the connectivity, makes use of the data-to-data center connectivity, private dark fiber-owned connectivity, high-speed uncontended connectivity to this Office 365 tenant anywhere in rest of the data centers. So that's coming
Just to recap that, the key there is to make sure that the DNS server that a client is talking to is in the region where the client is. So it doesn't matter where the client is making its DNS call from, it's where its upstream DNS server is making the call from. Is that clear? Yeah.
So a question then, looking at that routing, obviously you've used an example there, Australia, EU, because nice geographically.
Yeah, it's the worst that you can get.
But obviously there's data centres in the EU, there's data centres in Australia.
Yep.
Obviously, probably for most of the audience here, a more realistic option is Trans-Tasman, so Australia, New Zealand.
Yep.
And so I noticed from the Microsoft network slide, mm-hmm. it's like this point of presence in New Zealand.
There is.
It is.
Yep.
So therefore the same rules would apply for that Trans-Tasman
activity.
Yep.
And that's going to therefore have New Zealand traffic coming into an ingress in New Zealand.
Yep.
And then using that Microsoft network cross.
Correct. So, yeah, if you had a trans-Tasman network with internet egress points in Australia and in New Zealand, then it would be in your interest to make sure that New Zealand-based traffic was using a DNS server that egressed in New Zealand or that had a public IP address on it at some point that was a New Zealand-based IP, and that the Australian clients were upstreaming DNS to an Australian-based public service. Does that make sense? And then the benefit of that is that you'll get onto the Microsoft network in New Zealand if you're in New Zealand and Australia. Because, of course, it doesn't actually then matter where your data is. Well, obviously, it matters from a latency point of view, and we'll get to that a bit further when we talk about what the particular workloads are and how they hang together, because it's, you know, it's different for Skype for Business than it is for Exchange Online, for example. The considerations are miles apart. But in terms of optimizing the performance, whilst it might be different in each location, it's going to be the best that it can be, given whatever the particular circumstance, if you get onto that network there in New Zealand and then allow Microsoft to bring you under the Tasman. Does that make sense?
And
just
under
a color line.
Yeah. Damn, I hope no one was going to ask me that question. Sorry? Because I can't answer you. they're different types of connections.
Oh, right. Okay.
I just can't tell you what's what.
Green's better or orange?
Green's definitely
fine.
So I'll leave
you to make your own conclusions
better.
About what colour is what. But yeah, I borrowed this slide from a... the legend is purposely missing from the side of it, but kudos on your keen observation skills. I can't tell you any more than that.
So this is basically to say that Microsoft doesn't say each and every different connectivity, how they connect, right? So this is just a general overview of what Microsoft gives to the rest of the world, that all the data centers are interconnected. They are interconnected using dark fibers, terabytes of dark fibers, right? They don't give the complete details of each and every kind of links that goes through between the data centers. And coming to think of it, we had a general overview on how the global network is connected, interconnected, and how there are multiple data centers across different regions of the world. Now, the next part is to access Office 365, what are the different connectivity options that you can have while connecting to the Microsoft Global Network?
Stole the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah. And so we know Office 365 is a cloud-based service, and it is accessible to public endpoints. And the basic connectivity, as you all know, is if a user can be in office, a user can be in a cafe, he can be in some other remote office anywhere in part of the world, and all he needs is just an internet connection to be able to connect to an Office 365 endpoint, assuming there is no restrictions with respect to security. In general, any Office 365, and a user would be able to access those services, not only Office 365, any of the Microsoft public endpoints through a public internet, right? So I would like to discuss about public internet first, and I would like to weigh on the pros and cons of public internet, connecting to Office 365 workloads through public internet. And then I would like to go through another connectivity option, which is direct connectivity. And then once we go through direct connectivity, weigh those pros and cons, I would like to talk about briefly on Express Route connection that Microsoft offers as well. So with respect to public internet,
so just while you're getting that up, just to recap, those three ways to connect into Office 365 are through the internet, through direct connectivity or peering, and there's some limitations around that one, and through express route connectivity as well, some limitations we're going to discuss there as well. To be clear, each of these different connectivity options has its own pros and cons, and neither Microsoft nor FastTrack, for that matter, have any, I suppose, bias as to which way you choose to connect to your Office 365 services, other than what's going to give you the best user experience for your end users. So from Microsoft's point of view, Microsoft are paying to make all three of these connectivity options available to everyone who uses the Office 365 service. And FastTrack, funnily enough, actually sell all three of these options in internet connectivity, direct connectivity, and express route connectivity. So we're also not biased as to which way you go. So the conversation here really should be steered towards what are the workloads that you're looking at, where are your users located, and what are the specifics of their network, and then therefore what are the pros and cons of each of these approaches to connecting. So anyway, back to you.
That's right. So when a user connects through, say there is an organization again in Australia, and the user wants to connect to Office 365 using their internet connection provided by their internet service provider, it is most likely the company is going to have an edge router. Its edge router is going to have a proxy, and then the proxy is going to be connected to the ISP. And is going to access all its internet connection as well as any of the Office 365 workloads through Office 365 through the public internet. So This sounds simple, right? I mean, you just have a connection, you just have an internet connection with your ISP, you connect to Office 365 service, and that's all. You just have to work, you just will have your proxy connections and your security considerations, iSecurity considerations, because the same link, you're going to use the public internet as well. And so what are the factors that comes into play when you use the same link for your internet as well as for your Office 365 workloads?
Don't get this guy started about proxy servers. We'll be here all day.
So the most important factor that one needs to consider is when a user in the customer premises, he sends the data to Office 365, what he's doing is he's pushing all his data out through his internet link. And he forgets about the data that he sends. And now it's up to the internet to deliver it to the Microsoft Global Network and finally to the Office 365 tenant, right? So does he have control on the internet? No. Do you have control on the data that's going to, do you have control on the path that it's going to take to reach the Microsoft Office 365? I don't think so. And the most important aspect is latency, right? So if you look at it, you have your connection to an ISP, and it could pass through multiple hops, right? You don't have a clear definition of how many hops it's going to take to reach your Microsoft Office 365 destination.
And you don't have any SLA over that as well, right?
Yes.
So obviously inside your own corporate network, you've got SLAs with your service providers as to and some reasonable expectation of the latency that you can expect between, you know, say one of your end sites and your core routers, your core internet routers. And then Microsoft, there's an SLA and there's a reasonable expectation of the latency and the throughput availability that you can expect once your traffic gets to the Microsoft network, but there's this big gap in between of the public internet that, you know, and delays that are introduced in the public internet might actually be not the fault or not because of anything that's happened on the network of your internet service provider at all. So in the example that Arun's just put up here, you know, we're trying to get to Office 365, portal.office.com. We've started in our Melbourne office. Sorry if I'm stealing your thunder here. And we've moved through three ISPs before we get anywhere near the Microsoft network, which looks like this here is where we hit the Microsoft Edge network. I recognize that IP address, but that's a whole nother problem that I'm going to have to deal with later. The concept here is that if you have a look, so let's just assume for a second that this is our ISP that, you know, that we've paid money to every month to provide us with an internet service. And let's just say for a second that this here is Microsoft's ISP that they're paying money to every month to provide them an internet service. What about these guys here in between, ISP number two, right? So we don't have a commercial arrangement with ISP number two, and Microsoft don't have a commercial arrangement with ISP number two, but all of a sudden, they're now material in the performance of your end user's Outlook connection or their ability to have a Skype for Business, you know, video call or you know, download some files from SharePoint or whatever it is they might be doing. There's now this intermediary third party that neither your vendor in Microsoft or your own organization have a commercial relationship with, and so there's no SLAs at play. And so, you know, that kind of puts us on to the major challenge that we have in using the public internet for connectivity to Office 365.
And that's right. And then I think many of us would have dealt in our day-to-day life when we call our internet service provider that some of the service is down. Easily they would have said, it's an issue with the upstream provider. They are working on it, right? So that's a common thing.
Anyone heard that before?
Yeah. So basically, there is no accountability when you access Office 365 workloads through the public internet. And what you're dealing with Office 365 is you are going to send gigabits, terabytes of SharePoint data or to OneDrive, or you're going to exchange, you're going to send gigabits of mailbox out through that internet, and there is no guarantee that you know, your connection is going to be stable, your latency is going to be well within the limits, and for your network team to do an assessment and determine, okay, this much of bandwidth is going to be consumed at any point of time. So scheduling those workloads is going to be difficult, And obviously, when you do these kind of scheduled workloads and you have your internet users getting affected because, you know, it's hogging the network bandwidth. So these kind of, you know, these are most of the cons that this should be like a basic connectivity to Office 365. If an organization is has less than 20 people and there are very few Office 365 tenants and they upload or download a lot of data, move a lot of data to the cloud, then this is like a basic option that comes when it comes to respect to connectivity to Office 365.
Yeah, so there are some pros to using the internet. I want to touch on something quickly before we move on.
Yeah.
There are some pros to using the internet. Obviously, like you say, smaller organizations, it's definitely the lowest cost option to connect to Office 365. It gives you all the same functionality as any of the other connectivity options that we're going to talk about here. And yes, it has some drawbacks, but you know, if cost is a key factor, then it's certainly worth considering. Now, yeah. Arun's touched on something really important here.
Someone has a question there.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, so So I'll repeat the question for the video because you're right up the back there. So the question was that in a previous slide we mentioned that Microsoft peers or has a peering agreement with over 2,000 ISPs around the world in 60 locations as well. And this was something I was going to touch on. And so the question was, do those agreements include SLAs, and then could you inherit that SLA from your internet service provider? And so did I encapsulate that properly? Yeah, okay, so yeah. All right, so the answer to your question then is absolutely yes. So if you're lucky enough to be with a internet service provider that peers directly with Microsoft, then you would expect to have better connectivity than if you were with an ISP that didn't. And then, of course, if their ISP peered with Microsoft, then you know, that would be better than if their ISP didn't, so on and so forth, right? So eventually you want to be as the fewest number of organizations between you and Microsoft as possible. So yes, you would expect better performance in that case, but you certainly wouldn't expect any SLAs. And the reason for that is that telcos and ISPs and cloud providers, for that matter, behave very differently with regard to one another than they do with regard to the customers or, you know, enterprise or business organizations. So the agreements in place certainly won't have any SLAs in place with them. And there's also no ability to influence what one of those network administrators is going to do with that traffic. So you might find that one day, you know, your ISP routes traffic in a particular direction, and the next day, they for some business or commercial or technical reason, they now route traffic in a different direction, and all of a sudden, your entire routing infrastructure has changed from underneath you. So the answer is yes. You know, good telcos are going to be peering with Microsoft, but no, you can't really take that to the bank.
Is the
No, but you'd have to ask the ISPs, you know, how they, you know, what their peering looks like, or get onto their network and do some trace routes yourself and have a look. The
major ones do that?
The major ones all, for the most part they are, but where they're peering and how they're peering is something that only they would be able to answer. And even if you went on the peering networks, even if you went to the peering networks and asked them for, you know, a list of who's on their peering network, that still doesn't answer the question for you. Because, like, so, you know, if you work for an enterprise organization, it sounds like you might work for a telco because you said that you...
No.
Oh, you just blame telcos when things go wrong.
Yeah, systems integrator.
Right, okay, all right. So, you know, if you work for an enterprise or, you're representing enterprises at a systems integrator or whatever, then you're likely to... think where I was going with that. Oh yeah, you could join one of those peering networks, but that doesn't mean that Microsoft will peer with you. And so that's why you can't even ask the peering networks. The peering networks don't even know what's going on, because it's up to the individual telcos to establish that relationship with Microsoft over those networks or via direct fibre connectivity like we do, and actually establish those relationships and those peering connections themselves. So it's all part of the big black magic of the internet, unfortunately, and I don't mean to sound condescending by that, but it's about the best answer that I can give.
And
go on.
And
yeah, so that's the other point to answer your question, is that just by picking an internet service provider who happens to peer with Microsoft also doesn't necessarily solve your Office 365 challenges, because there's still commercial ramifications of that, and you know, you'll find that there are very few. You're actually speaking to a unique selling proposition of one of FastTrack's products, and so I don't want to dwell on that for fear of coming across self-serving. But yeah, so what I was getting to, though, I just wanted to cover off before we move on, was around the I'm trying to remember. This conversation's taking a different turn.
SLAs.
It wasn't around SLAs. I was talking about internet connectivity. Oh no, I did want to. I think we kind of covered it now anyway, because your question led us down the same path, which was that, you know, not all internet connections are created equal, and I think that we've probably adequately, you know, discussed that point now. So anyway, if it comes back to me, I'll bring it up again.
And to go on from here, if you're saying is all the Office 360, do we have to get rid of the public internet? No. It's more like, you know, there are a few Office 365 workloads. We will go through those workloads which use only the public internet, and they are not located in the Office 365 or the Microsoft's global network, which is otherwise called as Azure Networking. Like, say, if you're... I'll go through those, like Yammer and a few other workloads which will not use the Microsoft's global network, but it's going to use third-party networks to deliver those kind of contents.
Yeah, so conscious of the time, we've got a lot of stuff still that I'm really keen for us to cover.
Yeah.
So let's maybe keep moving. I might just punch through the other methods of connecting to the network pretty quickly, because I think we're all starting to get onto that path already. So bear with me. We'll try and just get through that so we can actually start. I'm really keen to get into the workloads, because I feel as though that's where some of the meat's going to be here. Try and just kind of realize that we're still in the overview and we're halfway through the session already. The first method we've discussed now at some length is to connect via the internet. The next option is to establish some kind of direct connectivity with Microsoft. So what does that mean? That's there's a couple of ways that surfaces itself up. The first is to establish a peering connection with Microsoft, and that's something that would be available to you if you're working for an internet service provider or some kind of network service provider. So Microsoft has a peering policy not to peer with end customers or with organizations. They peer with network and internet service providers for reasons that we don't necessarily need to discuss in too much detail. And then the other option is that there are some organizations out there, I only know of FastTrack, who provide a direct connectivity solution into Office 365 for enterprise organizations. So ours is called Cloud Connect. Happy to talk to you about it in more detail outside of the session, because I want to focus on, you know, giving you guys the technical value. But essentially, there's that product is one where you can get access to all of our peering connections with Microsoft, along with direct fiber connectivity that we have. And that provides access to all the Office 365 regions in the world and the Azure regions, along with all the public services, so Xbox and Bing and all that stuff as well. So that's scenario number two, and we will...
And just on the scenario number two, I just want to add on a few points. Especially this scenario covers a lot of, you know, the cons that are associated with the public internet, right? Latency being one of the major aspects, and you will have a reliable network connectivity where you will always know Microsoft global network is just going to be a hop away from your on-premises. So isn't that a good thing? And with respect to latency, right, when you have latency, when you talk about latency, you're not going to, the packets are not going to pass through multiple different hops or different routers through the internet. It's going to, from your edge router in your premises, it is just going to directly be connected to Microsoft's edge network. So that means you are bypassing everything in the internet, the middlemen routers. So that, in that case, it is easier to identify the accountability part, right? So the customer premises, his management, his internal network, he is accountable for that. And direct connectivity, whoever is your network service provider who provides these kind of connections, they are responsible for this. And then if there is an issue in the Microsoft, Microsoft is responsible for that. So it's easier to identify accountability. And the next thing is you can have SLAs, guarantees, right? Obviously, you can manage your WAN. And then your network service provider can obviously give you an SLA saying that, you know, I'll give you a direct connectivity to Microsoft, you know, give you a 99.9% SLA, 99.95% SLA to Microsoft. And then the Microsoft Global Network already offers an SLA of 99.9%. So pretty much you're going to have a 99.9% SLA for this, so which is a pretty good thing to cover. And with respect to the security considerations, just before we move on to Express Route, you don't have to be you don't have to invest a lot on the security aspects because your traffic is not going to go through the internet, and that link is not going to be congested with other kinds of traffic. And obviously, you can do QoS guarantees if you're using Skype for Business. If you have a public internet, your QoS ends in your premises. If you have a direct connectivity, your QoS ends till the point of entry into the Microsoft Global Network. And then I would like Yoni to discuss more about the other option of Express Route.
And so just to illustrate your point, if we very quickly flick back here, obviously going via the public internet, you can expect to see, you know, if you have a look at the latencies there, if you just want to point them out, Arun, here they are, then, you know, we've got latencies up there, maybe 140 milliseconds to get there. And then if you look via direct connectivity, which is not the slide that I clicked that one, then, you know, you might expect to have something along the lines of a couple of milliseconds of latency.
And so that will be from your edge routers. This will be from your, this is assuming this is from your edge routers that is egressing to the network service provider.
Yeah. In this case, however, it's not. You're sitting at your desk in Sydney. Anyway, that's a different story again. So, okay. So, breezing through very quickly for the last part about the third connectivity option. Hands, can I just get a show of hands in the room? Everyone's familiar with Express Route and what that is and how it hangs together? Okay, so that's most of the room. For those of you who aren't, Express Route is a product that essentially is offered by Microsoft, which is a direct connection into some Microsoft Enterprise services. It's built and managed by the Azure team. And there are some circumstances where you can get some Office 365 connectivity in there as well. So there are essentially three organizations involved in any Express Route connection, the first being Microsoft, who provide the connection into the Microsoft network and charge the customer a fee for it, the second being a service provider who sits in the middle and connects Microsoft to the customer and then charge the customer a fee, and then the last obviously being the customer, if you hadn't figured that bit out yet. So the Express Route connection was initially built for access to Microsoft Azure services. You can access services with private IP addresses, specifically IaaS virtual machines that you might have hosted in Azure. And then there's also connectivity available to all the public Azure services, either just in your region, or if you pay a premium to Microsoft, then you can get connectivity to public Azure services in other regions around the world as well. So this is going to behave quite similar to the second option that we described in direct connectivity, in that there's no intermediaries and no additional network hops in between the customer's network and Microsoft's, and provides, you know, perhaps the lowest latency option there. Now, everyone heard, I think it was about a year and a little bit ago, Microsoft announced that you could get Office 365 routes via Express Route as well. Anyone in the room have Office 365 routes coming via Express Route today?
How many people in the room
are liars? Well, and I don't think anyone, because nobody put their hand up. So turns out there was a bit of complexity involved in getting Office 365 routes to come through an Express Route connection. And to date, Microsoft haven't approved a great deal of those to happen. So there are some technical challenges. I'm conscious of the time, and I don't know how much everyone cares about the actual detail of those technical challenges. But for those of you who do, a quick overview is that there's a few considerations around how those routes are injected into networks. And what we've found, at least with deploying our Cloud Connect product, is that a lot of this comes down to how an internal BGP network is architected and where those routes are going to be propagated to and where that express route's going to be terminated to. So it's not quite as simple as Microsoft saying, hey, just plug this wire in and all of your Office 365 connectivity challenges will be solved. So there were quite a few issues that were experienced with the first of those rollouts. The second challenge comes in from the services that come inbound. We'll talk about this a bit later on. But there are some asymmetric routing considerations that can cause problems with Microsoft's firewalls if the customer doesn't architect their side of that service correctly. So Microsoft took a big step back and said, okay, no, you can't just go and buy this Express Route connectivity to Office 365 anymore. It now becomes an engineering engagement, and Microsoft go through quite a detailed process before approving any of those connections to allow those Office 365 routes to come through an Express Route connection that exists. There's a lot of different stories that a lot of different people have told me about the nature of that and whether it's possible and whether it's not. And in fact, you could walk around the exhibition out here today and you could get told five different stories, depending on who was talking to you and what their vested interest was in having you believe one thing or another. But we probably have a pretty good cross-section of large enterprise organisations in Australia represented in this room. And, that's kind of my yardstick there, is that's what's going on. And I'm also, I know what the information is, that it is possible to get it done. It is a lot of work, and you need to think about whether it's something that's going to bring you value in the first place. Just to close that off, don't need to deal with that right now. Do we have that reference there?
Yeah.
Which one is it? That one? Okay. So the slides will be available on Channel 9 after the session anyway, but if anyone is keen, and also just for the video's purpose, that link will take you to an article that describes some of the considerations around Office 365 connectivity via Express Route, and Microsoft have a pretty clear position on where they'll do it and where they won't do it. So if you want any further information, then that's the place to go.
So basically, they prioritize companies who have heavy Skype for Business traffic usage, or if they have a special security requirement as part of legislation, and those kind of requirements, and on a case-by-case basis, they approve these kind of requests for Office 365 connectivity through Express Route workloads.
So any questions on Express Route before we jump into the workloads?
Probably just the one key one is, obviously, this fixed similarities between Direct Connect and Express Route, but then what's the difference?
So
why Express Route over Direct Connect?
Well, so Direct Connect, when we say direct connectivity, it's a complicated question to answer. So from our point of view, so Fastrack's Cloud Connect product, which is a direct connectivity option to Microsoft, we built that product because we see the need for it. We actually built it before Microsoft announced Office 365 connectivity via Express Route. Essentially the answer is that Express Route connectivity, Microsoft's position on it is that they'll make those connections available to people only where that those particular requirements that Arun mentioned are the case, and for others that you should seek alternative means, being use the public internet or come to someone like Fasttrack to get a direct connectivity solution.
So basically, the Direct Connect then gives you that.
It's kind of like
intended in the O365 peering in Express Route.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. Essentially. Yeah.
That doesn't give you the IaaS.
It doesn't give you IaaS. Yeah.
Into the VNet peering.
Yeah. So look, I'll chat to you afterwards about it as well, because there's
just again at that high level we're talking about these options. Why would you pick one over the other?
And the answer is that in most cases you'd pick a direct connectivity option for your Office 365 traffic and then Express Route connection for your IaaS traffic.
That's basically working around the limitations of Express Route, right? So
yeah.
That's the answer I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And you know, in our case, you could have both of those products delivered via one network connection. But yep. Again, it's, you know, this not the purpose of this session. So let's move on. So you know, just to recap that, we've spoken at quite a level of detail about the different connectivity options into the Microsoft network. I just want to leave you to reflect, you know, as we move on to the workloads, I want to leave you to reflect on the underlying tone of what I'm trying to get to here, and I feel as though this message might have been lost in translation a little bit, which is that there are two elements here in the public internet and in typical enterprise WAN environments that really need to be considered now that we're moving to this kind of cloud-first world. So if you think back, the organization that you work for, it's very likely that your WAN environment wasn't designed with cloud workloads in mind. You know, either today, or if not today, only a few years ago, it's very likely that all of these workloads that we're talking about in Office 365 would have been hosted on-premises in a server in a data center somewhere on your enterprise network. Is that a fair assumption, do we think, guys? No one was... Anyone running BPOS 10 years ago? So there's probably a few. But anyway, you know what I'm getting at here, right? So your WAN was probably designed to give you the fastest possible connectivity into a data center. And then the internet certainly was designed to connect people in a way other than what cloud services are demanding today. So what I mean by that is that if you think about internet usage 10 years ago, the common scenario was that for a given client, that client would connect to a large number of endpoints out there on the internet and would transfer a small amount of traffic to each one of them. So you think someone's browsing a bunch of different websites, MySpace or something, when I'm trying to line up the timelines here, right? But you know, you'd be connecting to a lot of different services out on the internet and transferring a small amount of data. Now, with the way that the cloud services are moving, that's shifted quite substantially, at least in the business space. So now we're transferring a large amount of data between a much smaller number of endpoints out on the internet. So rather than, you know, going to 100 websites, maybe we still do that, whatever, but the point is that we now have this other use case where we've got to move a lot of data that traditionally would have come just from our local data center inside our WAN. We're now moving that large amount of data over the internet to only a small number of cloud providers that our organisation might be working with. So the underlying message there is just consider that the considerations for how you design your WAN have changed, and the considerations for how the internet should work and should be designed. Obviously, the internet's a bit of a harder thing to re-architect, but the considerations for what the internet is there to do has also changed, and so we need to think about that as we move forward. Am I making sense? So there is some good news in that, which is that if you consider what I was saying about internal WAN design, most WANs are designed to be efficient to get data to and from a data center somewhere, right? Great. So if you can establish some kind of direct connectivity between that data center, which your WAN is already designed around, and the cloud services that you're now working with, then that's going to still give you a fairly optimal design for how your network hangs together. Maybe there are fewer things in the data center, but if that data center feels to be in exactly the same place as your Office 365 Exchange servers from a latency point of view, then you know you could still build out a good solution there. So with that, let's move on and jump in and discuss... Geez, it's going to have to be briefly at this point.
Yeah.
each of the key workloads. So the first one that we want to talk about is Exchange Online. Obviously, everyone's familiar with Exchange Online, how it hangs together. There are a few different bits of connectivity that go on here. The first one that most of you will experience is the migration traffic to actually get all of your Exchange data and move that from your Exchange servers into Exchange Online. So there's some traffic that goes on there. And then once you're migrated to Exchange Online, there's obviously traffic that goes between your clients and the Exchange Online server ecosystem.
So with respect to this, what happens is Exchange Online, previously it used to have RPC or HTTP, and these days it uses MAPI over HTTP. If you consider what is the difference between this, the RPC over HTTP always required two long-lived TCP connections for RPC data in and RPC data out. That was pretty much designed for internet workload, like how Yoni mentioned it was for those days where the internet was not fully congested and we are not moving a lot of data.
But what I was trying to say is it was a hack.
And with respect to MAPI or HTTP, the performance is better. You might have experienced previously Outlooks where it keeps synchronizing for quite a lot of time, but over MAPI or HTTP, it kind of syncs pretty fast. And the major thing about connectivity to Exchange Online is, like when we talked about GNS, the GeoDNS gives the IP address of the CAS server that the client will connect to. It connects over the TCP. And then this CAS server does most of the heavy lifting and proxies to the exact Exchange server that's there in the Microsoft data center somewhere. So it does most of the heavy lifting. That means you're going to have a better Exchange online performance, right? And then with respect to SharePoint, and then the next point I would like to touch with Exchange Online before moving to SharePoint is the latency. Exchange Online is very intolerant to latency. You need to have less than 100 milliseconds for a decent performance, and if it is anything more, you get the connection disconnected and then trying to reconnect and all those kind of issues, right? If you're using public internet, it's always better to use it in the cache mode because it is more latency tolerant. But if you have an option of connecting directly through Direct Connect or through Express Route, then obviously you have the latency. You have very good latency and bandwidth availability so that you don't have to worry about performance. And then the next thing...
Yeah. Anyone use cache mode with 90 to 100 milliseconds of latency before? I have. It's really not a good experience. My suggestion is that anything more than 5 or 10 milliseconds of latency, and you're going to find that online mode runs pretty poorly and you need to go to cache mode, anything beyond that.
And just quickly to move to the next workload, which is the SharePoint online, it needs a lot of bandwidth. We are going to migrate terabytes of data to OneDrive and SharePoint, right? So it is more dependent on the available bandwidth, and latency is not an issue for that. And direct connectivity, Express Route are pretty good options when it comes to moving terabytes or gigabytes of data to SharePoint. And the DNS, the TCP connection is directly, you establish a TCP connection directly with your active SharePoint data center. That means there is no CAS server or something in the middle which proxies. So the connectivity is going to be pretty good, and you can make the best use of it through some throughput optimizations. And if you have better bandwidth and latency, obviously your throughput is going to be much better. And then quickly moving on to the next workload, which is Skype for Business. This is pretty important, right?
You want your slide?
Yeah.
This one here.
There are two types in which most of the organizations, you must be using Skype for Business for your conference calls, for your meetings. You might have concurrent meetings going on every now and then. It is important to understand two types of connectivity with respect to Skype for Business. One is peer-to-peer connection, and another is server-client model. Peer-to-peer connection is basically an user in your office, user A in your office, is communicating to user B in your office, and they establish a peer-to-peer connection. That means that it's not going to go to the cloud for the call control or for whatever the communication they are doing between each other. And then the next type of connection is going to be a server-client model, where you have a conference call, you have multiple people joining in, or user A in an office wants to connect to an user who is in an external organization or is not in the same premises. That means he has to make use of the client-server model, and the media relay is an important aspect, and the media relay has to be as close to your premises as possible. So again, DNS and all those things helps us connect to the nearest data center for this. And with respect to Skype for Business, The most important factor everyone is worried about is how video, how can you guarantee video and audio, right? So you have the QoS, you have to make sure from your edge router to whatever the Microsoft's global network, the latency is less than 100 milliseconds. That is the first thing. And second thing with respect to QoS, what with Microsoft offers end-to-end QoS guarantees for Express Route. That means if when you send Sky for Business packets from your client, you have to mark the DHCP packets with these values, DHCP markings, and any other network devices that is going to sit between in the middle till it reaches Office 365 has to honor these DHCP markings. So obviously voice needs first priority, and then comes video and rest of the applications.
So two other things. So we're running quite close to time now, and I do want to leave a little bit more time for questions. So I think that we'll probably wrap up on the workloads now. We can discuss connectivity to Office Pro Plus offline if anyone's interested. You can come and find us. We'll tell you where to find us at the end of the session. And before we move on to questions, I did just want to take a couple of minutes and talk about some different considerations around proxy servers, because I know that that's something that comes up quite regularly for people. So something to think about it when it comes to proxy servers is that proxy servers also still need connectivity to Office 365 services. So whether you're going to use a proxy service to connect to Office 365 or not use a proxy server is really a separate conversation to how your connectivity is going to hang together. So it's worth thinking about that. In terms of what the performance impact is of proxies, there's plenty of information online that speaks to that. I'll leave everyone to make your own determinations. Obviously, you're going to get better performance without a proxy server, and you're going to get better security in some cases if you are using a proxy server. So something to look out for that I think we have in our references is that there's some prefab proxy pack files that you can use to exempt certain Office 365 traffic from going through proxy servers at all. At the very least, there's also a reference to a TechNet article that will show you which Office 365 services require unauthenticated proxy access, so not to be forced to authenticate against the proxy in order for that traffic to come together. So just something to think about there. Anyway, with that, I'm conscious I want to leave a little bit of time open for questions, and you know, hopefully we can cover off as much of what's important. So any questions, guys? Yeah, over here. So the question was, is there a list of services affected by SSL inspection? And the answer is I'm not entirely sure. I could tell you the list off the top of my head, but I don't know if there's anything published. So come up at the end and we'll get back to you about that. Yeah.
If you're in, say, New York on a holiday,
yeah,
and you're connected to a local CAS server,
yep,
then you're in the Microsoft network and it comes across to a Melbourne tenancy.
Yep.
What sort of latency?
So
about 150 milliseconds.
So the claim is to the edge network. They don't claim what Microsoft claims is you must have 100 millisecond latency from your premises till the edge network in Microsoft, that is the nearest data center in Microsoft.
Well, yeah, speed of light being what it is.
So basically what they claim is still the entry point into the Microsoft's network. Yeah, not to the Office 365 tenant. Yeah.
And also, if you were in New York, hopefully you would have connected to a CAS in New York.
Yeah, you'll be sitting on a fiber connection in New York. And
yeah, exactly right. Yep. Other questions, guys? Up the back. A shared mailbox is treated differently. So no, they're not. So that's actually sorry, guys, if you could just try and keep down a little bit because we're just trying to answer those guys' questions up the back. So shared mailboxes, it's more a question of the Outlook client itself, because the Outlook client used to handle shared mailboxes differently to normal mailboxes. From a connectivity point of view, they behave in exactly the same way. It just depends on which Outlook client you're using as to whether you can run them in cache mode or not.
Yeah. We've shifted some users out to the cloud, plus their shared mailboxes, and we've
Yeah, so did you check if the shared mailbox is enabled for cache mode?
Not yet, but I will.
That's the thing to look at. And I think that they released that feature in 2013. Right. It's either 2013 or 2016. I think it's 2013. Yeah. Yeah, you're running Pro Plus? You're running Click to Run client?
No, we're running
Oh, okay. There you go. Yeah. On the client, but you need to also turn it on for the shared mailboxes themselves. Come see us on the Fast Track booth and we can go through it with you if you want someone to sit down and have a look at your settings. Happy to do that. I'm just trying to get through as many questions as we can before we're done. Yeah? The question was, is Exchange 2016 the last on-prem Exchange version that we're going to see? And I have absolutely nothing to say about that whatsoever. Are there any other questions? Yep. Okay, so it's a good question. So the question was, what kind of latency can you expect in an optimal network design? So you're connecting from Australia to the European tenant. Yeah, so what we find from here is that that's probably the worst one, you know, in terms of any combination of locations and connectivity. Maybe getting to the Sydney data center from Africa would be similar. But yeah, essentially you probably expect somewhere in the realms of 200 to 300 milliseconds of latency to get from one to the other, depending on how well connected you are. Up the back again. Sorry, can you tell me again?
It's got a SQL database.
Yep.
I'm dead fancy. It's got a SQL database in Sydney. It's running fine. It's got the app service that we're talking to the database in Sydney in Singapore.
Yep.
And they're using, covering the convention through is the latency we're seeing between those two services, is that the latency purely just from the data centers?
So basically, you know, you could determine this using tools like PSPing. Do a PSPing to it uses TCP, yeah, and then you measure the latency, and you could figure out at which point is it from your premises to the nearest data center, or from the nearest data center to all the way to your one in Singapore, and that would give you a rough idea.
All right, guys. Well, look, that's about it. I'll stick around afterwards. That's about it for today. Thanks very much, everyone, for coming. And if you'd like any more... Thanks, guys. If you need any more information, please come and find us on the Fast Track booth. We're just near the Office 365 part of the showcase. And myself and Arun and the team will be around all week to answer any other questions. And we'll stick around here for a while as well. Yeah.